Well, good afternoon to everyone. That was stirring. Good afternoon. Much better. I feel welcome now. Thank you, Dr. Hoover and Mrs. Roybal. It was beautiful as always. Thank you very much. You've heard about all the news. You're up to date, so you're well informed. You have the bullet in front of you. I almost forgot. I was sitting back there chatting with Mr. Hammer and almost forgot who was speaking. So as the music wound down, it dawned on me. He was asking, Mr. Hammer, he says, you do this as a volunteer, don't you? I said, yep, for 30 years. He said, you're not paid? And I said, nope. And he says, well, I guess we're getting what we paid for then. No, I made the joke. I said, you get what you pay for, Jerry. No, I made the joke. We do welcome all the people that are visiting here and the old friends. We have some people from different church locales. Please extend, as Mr. Helge has said, extend the right hand of fellowship to them. We've got people, I think, from up in Northern California. Mrs. Vieira is here. We have people from the Midwest and back east visiting us, and some new visitors and people visit with us from time to time. We're always very, very grateful that you've shared the Sabbath with us. 2,400 years ago, an event occurred when history changed your life. And I'm not quite sure it's happened before, but Mr. Zajac, dovetailed with him, I said, what are you speaking on? He said, it was wisdom. And so what you're going to hear today is a little bit of an expansion on the first message. Because this event changed your life, it means that we are indeed, as was mentioned in the first message, that we're just a few weeks away from Passover season. It begins the holiday season and a brand new, what we would say, religious year. And I wanted to assist, as many others will, in the preparation of these very, very important days, to assist us in thinking toward these days as we prepare, toward the events. Because once we get into the Passover season, and the days of unleavened bread, and the count toward Pentecost, it gets a little bit rushed, and sometimes we don't prepare enough. And so this message is to remind us and to prepare us. If you would, please turn to Psalm 111, and by extension, Psalm 112. Psalm 111 and 112 are connected intimately, both to each other structurally as well as thematically, and they lead to the Psalms of Ascent, which are read during Passover, Psalms 113 through 118. They have phrasing, in fact, many words that are common to both. So structurally, they're very important. But it's what they say to us that obviously we're going to concentrate on today. As was mentioned in our Bible study series in 1 Peter, we repeatedly seen, because Peter is a book of suffering, where God gives us examples of how we are to endure in the trials, a pattern, as it were. And Psalm 111 and Psalm 112 will show us this pattern again. Peter says that it is indeed Christ who our example is. So here in Psalm 111, we're going to see God, the Father, and by extension, Jesus Christ, in exactly the same light and with greater scope. The structure is important, and I don't want to give you all the literary background on these psalms, but it is rather fascinating. They are short psalms, as you can see, but they're highly structured, where the psalmist, the writer, and we don't really know who it was, took very great care in putting each, what we see as a verse, together. After the opening in verse 1, it's followed by doublets and triplets, beginning with a consecutive letter of the Hebrew alphabet. We call that an acrostic. An acrostic in the Old Testament is very, very rare. But each doublet or triplet begins with one of the letters. It would be like in our English alphabet, A, B, C, D. All the good men, the next verse would be, because they see, could they not? And in Hebrew, because their words, there are so few words they can use, so few words they can use, it becomes more difficult, and so the exceeding care of an acrostic is important here. Of these two, and of the 150 Psalms, of these two, there are only nine, and we will look at two. As we read these verses, I want you to note the accent on the second section of each verse. Now, before we go to Psalm 111, I want you to hold your hand there, if you would, please, and turn with me to Psalm 136, and you'll understand what I'm talking about relative to this accent. Indeed, this is poetry. Many people believe, many scholars believe, this was set to music now since long lost. We sang two or three today, and we will sing many, many from our hymnal because many of our hymns are directly from the Psalms. Now, let's look at Psalm 136 and think of it as poetry, lyrical poetry. Verse 1, Psalm 136. Oh, give thanks to the Eternal, for He is good, for His mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the God of gods, for His mercy endures forever. Oh, give thanks to the Lord of lords, for His mercy endures forever. And this goes on, a statement, then a refrain, 26 times. And they can't be said the same. It's almost as making a declarative statement and then ending it with something very profound relating to it. Verse 4, to Him who alone does great wonders, for His mercy endures forever. If you ever hear it on a tape or a CD, and many of you know I love to listen to the Bible on audio, it's beautiful. His mercy endures forever. And that's the way the narrator in most translations will read it. So it's very important. So go back to Psalm 111 with that thought behind it. Let's begin. Verse 1 begins, praise the Eternal. Literally in the Hebrew, it means to praise Yah. Hallelujah. Yah, very, very simple. It goes on to say, I will praise the Eternal with my whole heart. This is where the acrostic begins. The first word in this verse is, I will give, or I will give thanks to the Eternal, begins with the Aleph. I will praise the Eternal with my whole heart in the assembly of the upright and in the congregation. The works of the Lord are great, studied by all who have pleasure in them. His work is honorable and glorious, and His righteousness endures forever. He has made His wonderful works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and full of compassion. There is a lot in those four verses. There's a lot because of the way it is structured, the way it is put together. But there are three concepts that we can readily see. And you're going to see a word referenced over and over and over again in the first four verses. See if you can pick it out as we go through it. The first three concepts is we are to praise God with our whole heart, our whole being, all that we are. It says, love the Lord your God, Deuteronomy says, with your whole heart, with all that you are. We are to praise and honor God with our whole being. We are to give thanks is the second idea. We're to be grateful. We're to be thankful. And we'll talk about that later. But we are also to do it in the assembly. When it says that, it says, with my whole heart I will praise the Eternal, in the assembly of the upright and in the congregation. Do you know what he's talking about? This. You're the assembly of the upright. You're the congregation. So it says that we are to do this here. Of all places, we're to do it here. It doesn't say to stand out on a street corner. It doesn't say to stand in a public area. It says to talk about these things in the assembly of the upright, in the congregation, when we are together. That's important. It's not a public display. And it's also Godward. It's not usward. It is directed toward God. It is not directed to the person saying it. It's not about us. It's about God, and we're to do so with our whole heart. As we read the following verses, we get a sense of this content and this attitude and this direction and this focus. Bottom line, this Psalm 111, it's not about us. It's about God. It has nothing to do with us directly. It has to do with Him. So we will see that we need to remind ourselves and remind one another, because our memories are poor. At least mine's poor and getting poorer as time goes by. Verse 2, The works of the Eternal are great, studied by all who have pleasure in them. The works of the Lord, the works of the Eternal are great, and they are to be studied by all who have pleasure in them. He has made his wonderful works to be remembered. The Lord is gracious and full of compassion. We see God's works mentioned over and over and over again. It means just that, the works that he has done, the things that he has accomplished. The works of the Lord are great. His work is honorable and glorious, and he has made his wonderful works to be remembered. We'll see it again later in the psalm. He says they're honorable and glorious, these works. They are to be studied and remembered by those who have pleasure in them. When someone has pleasure in something, it means that they were a recipient of it. It means that these works were directed to an individual by God. We have pleasure, therefore, in those works and those gifts. We are to remember them, he says. They are to be studied, these works. You heard in the opening message by Mr. Zajac, one of those works, which we'll get into in this psalm. It has to do with the Passover. They're to remember the wonderful works. We sang about those wonderful works in the intervening hymn after the first message. It talked about the glorious works of God. They're to be recalled, reminded, remembered, because we're the recipients of those works. When it comes to the Passover and the Exodus from Egypt, obviously it was Israel, but by extension, it has to do with us. And it is all about God and his works. He, God, also in these verses, is called righteous. He is also called gracious and compassionate. Our Bible tells us that God is gracious and compassionate to multiple generations and succeeding generations. We're to be reminded of that. We're to remember that. But why? Why all this remembering and studying? Well, there's for two reasons, I believe, and I mentioned it a minute ago. We forget. And when we forget, we complain. We complain just exactly like another group of people do or did when God did wonderful works. Who would that group be? It was Israel. Israel was coming out of Egypt, and that's why this psalm and the psalms all the way to 118 are connected to Passover and Israel being released from Egypt by the works of God. It is the reason that Psalm 111 talks about remembering. We must remember. We must remember lest we forget. We must remind ourselves and each other. Of what? What should we remind ourselves and each other of? We'll see in a minute. But also, why must we remind? Because man has this tendency to complain. It's a certain type of people that I found in my getting longer life all the time. It's a certain type of person that complains the most. It's almost universal. It always happens. This certain type, it's usually not the destitute or the poor, the horribly poor. It's usually those that are moderately well off, even lightly well off, whose stomachs are usually full. They have plenty to eat. They have clothes on their back. Those are the ones that usually, in my experience, complain. And they complain loudly. God has not blessed me enough. My house is only 4,000 square feet, and they have a home that's 6,000 square feet. This isn't fair. I didn't get the job I wanted. I didn't get the job I deserve. It's not fair. I have to drive this 2-year-old pile of junk. God has not been fair. God has not been giving or as helpful as he should be. God needs to be better to me and nicer to me. I'm sure that's not you. It's surely not me. I'm always grateful, always thankful, always appreciative of the good things I've been given. Please stop my family from leaving. No, we complain. We complain. So let me tell you a story. It's called The Caddy. Two golfers stepped up to the first tee on the St. Andrews course, the golf course in New York. The older golfer was a kindly man who played a thoughtful, deliberate game. The younger golfer was full of pride and impatience. On the first hole, he sliced, lost his ball in the tall grass, hit another one, and had a score of 8 instead of 4 or 5. And the next hole was even worse. Frustrated, he began hollering at the caddy, "Keep your eyes peeled. I'm not here to do your job for you." Thereafter, every bad shot was the caddy's fault. At the end of the first 9 holes, the younger golfer was so upset that he discharged, he fired the caddy, and carried his own bag. "That caddy made me nervous. He doesn't like me, and he's sure no help. Doesn't know this course at all. I don't like him. I say good riddance to him. Glad he's gone." After several more holes had been played without a word, the older golfer broke the silence. "Several years ago, a little kid from Yonkers came up here and became a caddy. He was a sweet-natured boy, quick-witted, willing, and had a nose for golf. Everybody liked him. His name was William. He had a club foot. But that didn't affect his caddying. He was very good, and it was a pleasure to be out with him. A famous doctor, a member of this club, became interested in William and took him south that winter and operated on his foot. When William returned, he went back to caddying. The doctor, however, had to give up golf shortly after that because of his health. And it wasn't long after that when he died. Months later, I was playing around with William, carrying my bag. It was spring. The fields and hedges were alive with blossoms. William stopped several times to gather flowers until he had quite a bouquet. 'Who's the girl, William?' I asked. 'I haven't any girl,' he said, 'sir. They're for my friend, the doctor.' He says, 'I put these flowers on his grave once a week.' The young man replied, 'Now that's a caddy worth having.' The younger golfer said, 'Whatever happened to him?' The older golfer paused and replied, 'For 9 holes, he carried your bag.'" These verses teach us to ponder and to remember, to recall and to remind ourselves and one another the wonderful works that God has given. His Son, Jesus Christ, does the same thing, and we read about that in the New Testament. He reminds us to keep this focus, to be ever grateful, to be ever thankful, ever remembering. When we speak of God's goodness to our own heart and to others, that is the fulfillment of this psalm, to remind ourselves and one another of God's good gifts, to share the good things that God has done, and to speak of it often. There is much to remember in each of our lives. Verse 5 through 8, he continues. These give specific examples of what God has done. Verse 5, he has given food to those who fear him. He will ever be mindful of his covenant. He has declared to his people and made known the power of his works in giving them the heritage of the nations. The works of his hand are verity and justice. All his precepts are sure. They stand fast forever and ever and are done in truth and uprightness. These are verses that tell specifically what God has done. He gave them food. He made known his power. He gave his law and the covenant. His truth he gives us. It's truth and justice. Veritas in the Greek. They last forever. And God's truth, his commandments, his judgments are given to us. We have them on our laps. And they last forever. These verses give a particular focus. They give a contrast, as it were, because a contrast was the world of today. There are many different voices in our world. They're loud, they're audible. The TV, the radio, our phones, the internet, there is a host of voices. They are all vying for your attention. And they're all saying that they have the truth. The truth is with them, and they guarantee it. Many times the young folks will ask us, give us a message of application, something we can use. Well, I could think of no better than this, is to focus on remembering. As you get older, your memory starts to slip. It becomes harder to remember and to recall. But nonetheless, you need to keep your focus and you need to remember. Our jobs, the families that we have, our church, God kind of gets pushed down further and further. The older you will become, God becomes a little less important, a little less distant, a little more vague. The career, and kids, and just stuff happens, and God slowly sinks. Job and family, even the church, the physical body, they're all important aspects of our life. But let's review. Of job and family and church and God, let me ask you, nobody out loud, please. In your mind, inside of you, deep down inside of you, between God and family and church and something else you can think of, what goes first? What is right at the top, or should be, all the time, every time, all day long, every day? I don't mean thinking about it nonstop, but when you do ponder deep inside, when you think with you, what comes to mind? I would hope that we would all agree that God and His Son Jesus Christ come at the very top every time. Sad to say, they don't. They don't. Because these voices all want your attention, and they crowd these important things out. But our focus should be there. What key elements about God and Jesus Christ are in this focus? Let me give you some examples. Possibly theoretical, theological ponderings of structural, systematic theology. Maybe that's what God wants us to think about when we think about Him. No, no. What about Greek syntax in the New Testament and its first century application? No, no. Is it important about God whether Psalm 111 and Psalm 112 are acrostic, contain a chiasm midway, which it does? No, that's not important either. Because what is important in the focus that we have should be very, very personal and very unique, because it occurs only with you. The things that you would focus on are not the same things I would focus on. And of the 100-plus people we have in this room, they would all be different, because we're all so different. So very, very different. I'm stunned by that every time I see a group of people. They don't look alike. Physically, they don't look alike. They're not all the same age. Some are married, some aren't. Some are men, some are women. Some have on brown shoes, some have on black shoes, some have on red shoes. Everybody's different. And so are our backgrounds. They're as varied and as complex as there are our numbers. It's infinite and limitless, the experiences that we all have had individually. But no one can ever deny you, down deep inside, what you know more than anyone else knows. No one on the planet, not your closest friend, not your spouse, no physical human being knows this more than you. And that is what God has done for you. The works that He has done for you are unique to you. When we read of these verses in Psalm 111, it is generically and specifically speaking of Israel in Egypt. But it's more than that, because you'll see that there's nothing specific about it. It can be applied very, very easily to the great works that God has done for you. And don't minimize some of those works. I'll tell you why. When they occurred, whether it be a job or a car, something physical, or something with your health, or something with someone you know, when that work occurred, when God did that good thing, it was the thing you had prayed about and thought about and hoped for and longed for and beseeched God for. And now that it's over, and there's been a year, two, 3 years in between that event, that's no more one of the great works of God. That's just something that happened. And we push it aside, and we want another one. God doesn't tell us that in Psalm 111. He tells us to remember the great works that he has done in history as well as with us. We are to remember them, to recall them. And no one ever can deny that those things happened to you, because you know they did. This is a profound simplicity in Psalm 111 and in these verses when we apply them internally every day. To reference our Bible study in Peter, which I think everyone is enjoying, and you know, here's a plug for the Bible study, is we invite you very, very much to attend. It is interactive. I know I speak for Mr. Fish and Mr. Rudace, the three of us that are giving this particular series. We don't want to stand up and talk. We want to hear what you think. We want to hear how you feel these verses in 1 Peter relate to you. And so with Psalm 111, we need to apply these not only to the historical events that we know in the Old Testament, but also as they apply to you individually. The Bible study reminds us of trials, fiery trials, that we will experience. Use the analogy, funny enough, Mr. Rudace, I think, used the analogy. It's kind of like heading into traffic, heavy traffic. Now, nobody can appreciate that in Southern California, or in the world, except Southern Californians, right? We get traffic like nobody else. I used to live in the New York Metroplex. They got nothing. You hear me? They got nothing on us. What they think is a traffic jam is nothing compared to what we got out here. But Peter tells us we are going to have trials, fiery and varied. But as God has shown us in the past, we will get through them. We will get through them. And that is his promise. We may be battered, we may be a little bloodied, but we will get through them. And we will be tested, and we will be tried, and we will have experience, and we will have knowledge. A friend in Redlands knew that I was a Perry Mason fan, have been for 30 years, and I've seen every one of the programs. How many of you remember Perry Mason? Okay, very good. Oh, some of you that are younger, my kids are up to here with Perry Mason. And of course, Ironside, the second follow-up series. I always found it interesting. The show was on 8-9 years, and this friend wanted me to borrow these tapes. Now, don't tell him I have them, but I didn't have the heart to tell him I had them. Oh, this is very nice. Thank you. Let me borrow these. And there were 272 episodes over 7, 8, 9 years. He never lost. Yeah, I know. There was one or two cases. No, he won that one, too. He won that one, too, in the end. By the end of the Palmolive soap commercial at the very end, he'd won that one, too. But what was fascinating, and we could apply it to a show today, like a movie like Iron Man or 24, any one of the dramas that you see, after 272 episodes, I wonder if he's going to win. I wonder if he's going to make it through this one. I wonder if he's going to find the criminal. I wonder if the bad guy or bad gal will confess. I mean, what a stupid question, right? But we tuned in every week, didn't we? We were bright. I'm going to tune in to see if Perry Mason loses this week. But you know what? We do the very exact same thing with God, don't we? I wonder, this one's pretty bad. I don't remember about the last one. Don't want to remember about the last one that he got me through, but this one's bad. I'm wondering if he's going to pull me out of this one. Psalm 111 says that we are to remember and to recall how God has done the wonderful works. Let's move to 9 and 10. It says, he has sent redemption to his people. He has commanded his covenant forever. Holy and awesome is his name. The fear of the eternal, very famous verse. The fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom. A good understanding have all those who do his commandments. His praise endures forever. He talks about redemption to his people, and that's another code word in this psalm. Redemption of his people is the code word for Israel out of Egypt. That's why we know these psalms are connected to Passover, because of their content. The verse is historically significant. It's talking about the Exodus. The preceding verses, we know what the works were referring to that he made. The psalmist talked about the wonderful works of God, the plagues on Egypt, the blood on the doorpost and the Passover lamb, the parting of the Red Sea, the manna that came from heaven, the water that appeared miraculously in the desert. All are part of this, what we call a historical motif. They all are connected. If I said manna, you'd know what I was talking about. If I said water in the desert, you'd know what I was talking about. If I said blood on the doorpost, you'd know what I was talking about. These are the wonderful works that God did for Israel that they're to remember. These are his works. What's interesting about the Psalms, and when you read the Psalms, in this particular case, the writer is some 500 to 600 years removed from the events. It's long ago history. Long ago. This would be analogous to us talking about the Crusades as the greatest event in history. 500, maybe 600 years ago. And the psalmist says, remember these. Recall these to mind. Don't ever forget them. Because it displays something very, very important. Verse 10, this psalm ends where it began, with praise for God. The psalmist tells us that knowing God is awe-fearing and reverence, to know him. It is the beginning of wisdom. You don't fear God, you don't begin wisdom. You're not in awe of God, you won't obtain wisdom. When someone's not in awe of something, when someone doesn't, and we don't mean in a terror-inspired fear, we're talking about awe-fear. You're not very humble. It's very difficult to teach somebody anything when they're not humble. Kind of like the golfer we talked about. It's very difficult to teach someone who thinks they know it all, deserves it all, wants it all. It's very difficult to teach them. But this says that holding God in his proper place and directing our lives and our thoughts, not exclusively, because we have a life to live. Well, at least I do, and I know a lot of you, and you've got a life to live. But it says to have our prime focus, especially in times of joy and in tears, on God and his remembrances. This psalm emphasizes God's works, doesn't it? And we're to remember them. It emphasizes what God has done. And when it tells us about these works, it tells us about his character. It reveals who God is. He is a loving, a compassionate, a gracious God. He's all these things because of the works that he does. It reveals his character, his mind, who he is. It does not make him God. He's already God. But this reveals more about him as the things that he does. The things that he physically, as it were, does. And therefore, as in the first message, Mr. Zajac rightly said, the works that we do, the things that we say, the things that we do, the thoughts that we have also reveal our character. They reveal who we are. A man's belief, a woman's belief, or beliefs should be evident in their actions. Sadly, they always aren't. But they reveal who we are and what we think and how we understand. We don't observe Passover or celebrate Passover. It's always an interesting phrase, isn't it? We observe Passover. We also celebrate it. We celebrate Passover. Yes, it is the death of Jesus Christ, but it also pictures the resurrection, of which we have hope. We do not observe or celebrate Passover as simply a historical event. We don't celebrate the New Testament Passover as simply a historical event. We do so because it is very, very personal. Very personal. Our belief is, unless you are baptized, you cannot partake of the Passover. And as you know, we've had some recent baptisms for which we're very thankful to God. But God has indeed done works and wonders in our lives personally. And these people who have just been baptized will now be able to partake of the emblems of the Passover. We hold it very, very passionately, don't we? We hold it very, very dear to us. It's very, very important to us. It is the most solemn night of the year. It's one of the most important. But we do not observe it as a historical event. We observe it as a personal event because it is so different, because of the things that God has done in our lives. And again, the things that have been done in your life are completely different than the person sitting next to you. They might not be able to relate, understand. You may even be married. They don't understand. They can understand. They're not supposed to. Because the gift was not to them. The gift was to you, for your understanding. The works of God for me are very, very different than they were for you, I'm sure. And so throughout history. And we can read this in the patriarchs, all the different stories of the Bible, in the Old Testament, the New Testament. Their experiences were so, so different. There are very few that are alike, that are exactly alike, or even somewhat similar. They are different. What were these wonders? What were these, as the psalm says, what were the honorable and glorious, what were these works that were done in your life and my life? Let's talk about you. What were yours? Dwell on them. Think about them, especially as we enter into the Passover season. Remind them to yourselves. Was there a Red Sea in your life? Was there a Passover, symbolically, in your life? This Red Sea, did God part it? How did he part it? Remind yourself of the circumstances. Recall it to mind. Study it, the psalm says. Remember it. Remember the historical. Remember the personal. Well, I tell you, I'm kind of getting ready to wind down. But we still have Psalm 112 to go through. Now, wouldn't that be a sad thing, especially to our visitors, if I went for another 45 minutes? I told a lot of our people, I said, you know, be careful. Always be careful how the service is conducted. We don't want people's first Sabbath to be their last Sabbath. And they said, but you're speaking, Mr. Garnett. That's a risk. We still have Psalm 112. So let's read just a little of it, because I'm going to leave the rest of Psalm 112 to you. It begins, these psalms do, with, again, more important phrasing. Praise the eternal. Praise the eternal. Blessed is the man who fears the eternal, who delights greatly in his commandments. Can you see that the structure is very, very similar? Remember, it's acrostic. If you want to get a Hebrew Bible, you'll see how structured it is. But you'll see the same type of content. Praise the eternal. Blessed is the man who fears the Lord, just like Psalm 111, verse 10. He who delights greatly in his commandments. Same verse again, verse 10. It really leaves off, or begins where it left off in Psalm 111. It just keeps right on going. But it's different. It's different in length. It's different in content. But its theme is very similar. It's what we would say, it's a different, same goal, different emphasis and direction. Because in Psalm 112, the focus is no longer on God. The focus is on you and how we exemplify the things that we have had happen in our life. The things that God has done in our life are important. He expects a result. He expects us, obviously, to be extremely grateful. He expects us to understand what he's done. He expects us to trust him. That every time we do call on him, somehow, some way, probably not in the way or the manner that we would like, God will get us somehow through it. The focus in Psalm 112 is on us, because blessed is the man, woman, blessed is The person who fears the Eternal, who delights greatly in his commandments, his descendants will be mighty on earth. The generation of the upright will be blessed. Wealth and riches will be in his house, and his righteousness endureth forever. See the same theme again. By the way, the riches and wealth, they're not talking about riches and wealth. They're talking about riches and wealth. I'm kidding. It may not be the riches and wealth you're thinking of. Maybe a little less tangible. But it's talking about the righteous individual. As we heard in the first message, the person who conducts a holy life in response to the things that God has done. When someone has done something very nice for you, the normal reaction, standard reaction, when someone's done something nice for you, you reciprocate. You reciprocate, don't you? You've done something nice for me, I would like to do something nice for you. You hear it all the time. I've done it, you've done it, we've all done it. But in this case, as you read Psalm 112, as we approach Passover season, that's not really what God expects. God really expects the reciprocation to him to a great degree, to give him praise, honor, and glory, but also to reciprocate by extension to one another, as you'll see in this psalm. So the focus is basically on how we should live. What concepts, what ideas should we focus on throughout the day? How much of our day do we devote to important things? Very, very important things. How much do we focus on that was at the very top of that list? Job, family, church, all are important. All are important. But God expects to be number one, and he'll take care of the rest. He will take care of the ordering of that list for you. Because if we miss number one in that position, number two and three and four and five and six and seven become very, very muddled. Take it from personal experience. So what concepts and ideas should we focus on? What thoughts should dominate our minds, our speech, my speech, your speech? I would ask as we approach Passover, it's a simple homework assignment, isn't complex at all. I would ask for you to please read Psalm 112. Psalm 112. And when you're done with that and studied it, read Psalm 113 and 118, especially as we approach the Passover season. Because I believe that these verses and these psalms are so rich with meaning for all of us. And they carry us from the concepts of the Old Testament into the concepts of the New Testament. So that's what I would ask you to do. Psalm 112 in particular and Psalm 113 to 118 as we approach Passover. And oh yeah, remember what God has done.